Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
The margin between living your night and dying is, it's really small.
A look at homelessness in Fairbanks, a frigid city with no low-barrier shelter. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, February 15th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, a third subpoena as the Anchorage Assembly looks into the former health director's fraudulent credentials.
You're simply wanting to know about the investigation and what was done in the process.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Annie Wright Schools, located in Tacoma, Washington, offers rich, thoughtful, and internationally recognized programs for students from around the world. A variety of boarding options are available year-round. There's a virtual preview of the school, the faculty, and campus for high school students seeking to explore international baccalaureate academics, arts, and athletics at aw.org/Alaska. This message sponsored by Annie Wright Schools.
A man's death while sleeping outside in Fairbanks a few days before Christmas when the wind chill was around 50 below has highlighted a disturbing fact about Alaska's second largest city. Fairbanks has no low-barrier shelter for people experiencing homelessness. Advocates say that leaves a gaping hole in the already thin safety net Fairbanks has to help the unhoused survive winter in the coldest city of its size in the country. That's what a reporting team from the Anchorage Daily News documented in a recent story. ADN reporter Michelle Terrio Boots says 55-year-old Charles Akiviana's death in a snowbank not far from a grocery store brought into focus a difficult truth, that living unhoused in Fairbanks can be deadly.
It was just a clear case of this person died because they were exposed to the elements. And I think it was just one of those things that we all kind of know on a level happens, but it was just put in such stark terms that it was hard to ignore. You know, this unhoused man died in a snowbank at weather that really no one can survive outside. And, you know, there were a lot of questions. Did he try to seek shelter? What was he doing out there? That's what got us interested in looking. And, you know, talking to a few advocates up there, we found out that there is no, I guess, what people in Anchorage might consider a low barrier shelter, a place where just anybody, regardless of if they've had something to drink, if they're on a substance, that anybody can just walk into and seek shelter for the night. And so that combination of whether that is deadly frequently and no low barrier shelter just got us curious. So we decided to go up there and see for ourselves.
What does that mean to not have a low barrier shelter? And I mean, we're sitting here in Anchorage. It's not like Anchorage has done a great job of helping folks that are unhoused either, but there is a difference between those types of shelters, right?
Yeah. Fairbanks has something called the Fairbanks Rescue Mission, which is like a very established organization, but there are some pretty stringent rules and guidelines you have to meet to get in the door. And that includes taking a breathalyzer and being sober, 0.0 sober, and taking a drug test to see if you're on drugs. So they don't allow people who are on any kind of substance. And that, you know, advocates would say, that's a lot of the people who are seeking shelter. That's a lot of the people who are kind of remain chronically unhoused or homeless in Fairbanks. And so while everybody agrees that, it seems to agree that the Fairbanks Rescue Mission does a lot of good and important work, advocates say there's a safety net, there's a huge hole in that safety net. And that would be a low barrier shelter that accepts anybody. You can walk in any time of night and day and just take refuge from the cold.
Right. And You were partnered up with photojournalist Mark Lester with the Anchorage Daily News. You and Mark went with folks to see how they were surviving in Fairbanks as unhoused folks. And Mark took some amazing photos that are, you know, a huge contribution to telling that story, I think. But describe it for me, you know, for the radio listeners, what did you see? What kind of things were people doing to survive?
Yeah, I mean, first we saw some tent encampments where people had set up camps in, you know, green belts, little patches of forest. We were also taken to an abandoned house where people were squatting. It was just filled with stuff, filled with belongings. Probably, who knows how many people had gone through there. It was dark, but it was somehow being heated, or an attempt was made to heat it with just leaving the oven door open. And that looked like a pretty rough way to live. And then we were, you know, we talked to a guy named Scott who just described walking around all night. You know, people try to have bunny boots or as warm shoes and coat as they can, and they just keep moving. They just constant motion. And then they also, you know, the strange logic is that to get into the sobering center, which is a warm, safe overnight place, you have to be drunk.
Right.
And to get into the mission, you have to be sober. So a few people pointed that out to us, that those were the two options. And we really saw a lot of different attempts being made to provide safe shelter for people, but the system just isn't developed enough to have, I guess, fully what's needed.
And speaking of the services like that, that people are able to provide in Fairbanks, you talked to the folks at the soup kitchen there. And there was a part in that story about how someone there told you, like, you know, in terms of how these people are suffering, they just said, look around, right? Tell me about that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the chef, Matt, said, look around. Like, a lot of the people who are here for breakfast are missing fingers due to frostbite. It's hard to imagine a more rugged, difficult place to be homeless, honestly, than Fairbanks. And the people we met, especially the unhoused people we met, who were very generous in talking with us and showing us how they live, really, that's true. It takes constant kind of ingenious hard work to be homeless in Fairbanks and to survive. And the climate is just so unforgiving that the margin between living your night and dying is really small. And I think that's always on people's minds.
Yeah. And like you said before, I mean, what a lot of folks are saying is needed is a low barrier shelter. So what's going to happen with that? Are they on the path to getting something like that, or no? What do you think?
You know, it sounded like there was some reason to think that things were moving in that direction. The city of Fairbanks has a housing coordinator who would really like to see a low barrier shelter of some kind, but it's not something that I think the city is going to take on itself, as has happened in Anchorage. And we have to remember, in Anchorage, that's a relatively recent development that only really happened during the beginning of the COVID pandemic. Mm. But I think that there's an increasing understanding that what's available is not sufficient.
Gotcha. Yeah. You know, you described talking to these folks out in the street, you know, the guy that you mentioned that to stay warm would walk all night long, and they're in a real risky situation, of course. And, you know, I wondered, as a reporter, you know, we're not supposed to get like emotionally involved or invested or whatever, but did you wonder if that guy was going to make it through the winter, kind of thing?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think every person that we talked to, people who were, again, generous with their time and kind to talk to us, you know, there's always that thought and worry in the back of your mind. None of them really knew where they were going to spend that night. And so it's impossible to know what the future holds, but I hope for the best for all of them. And I also know that some of the toughest people on the planet are people who are unsheltered in Fairbanks, Alaska, and finding a way to live and make it work.
That was Anchorage Daily News reporter Michelle Terrio-Boots, who, with ADN photojournalist Mark Lester, reported on homelessness in Fairbanks. You can find their full story, called Homeless Below Zero, at ADN.com. A new facility will open later this month in Anchorage, specifically designed to improve the way people experiencing homelessness address some immediate needs and connect to housing and other services. It's one more step forward in Anchorage's push to end homelessness, and as Alaska Public Media's Jeremy Shea reports, it's one of the first facilities of its kind in the state.
On the inside, the new Navigation Center looks nothing like the industrial warehouse turned soup kitchen that used to operate here. There's a lot of natural light filling the space, inviting furniture, and cheery paint on the walls.
So this space before didn't have any windows, so really brightening up the space and using design and architecture and color to really try to lift people up.
David Rittenberg is the Senior Director of Adult Homeless Services for Catholic Social Services. That's the nonprofit operating the new facility called the Third Avenue Resource and Navigation Center. He's giving a tour.
Then people will come into this lobby area where we're going to have navigators coming out and engage with people and say, hey, what are you here for today? What kind of service can we get you connected to? We have about 30 partners lined up that are going to be providing outreach, engagement, or providing services or classes here on site. And so if someone is here...
There are newly renovated, accessible bathrooms and showers, a secure storage room for people to drop off belongings, and multiple small rooms set up like mini offices and a co-working space. Some are intended for people to have private conversations in. Some are set up with docking stations for laptops and teleconferencing equipment. It's a relatively new way of providing services to people who are homeless in Anchorage. Social service organizations have worked together before to set up pop-up sites where someone can connect with multiple agencies in one location. But permanently getting this many social service agencies under one roof here takes things to a new level. Rittenberg says it will make a big difference.
Yeah, I think that was one of the major challenges is services were scattered in a lot of places.
For example, outreach teams do visit the Brother Francis shelter next door.
But it would be one team a day, that type of thing. It wasn't concentrated. So if you needed to go see three or four different places to, get whatever is on your list checked off, oftentimes it was a bus pass and a prayer.
Rittenberg says they will also run a shuttle service to help people get to and from the center. Anchorage Assembly Chair Suzanne LaFrance says the facility is a critical addition to homelessness resources available in the city. She said it's also a sign of how far attitudes about addressing homelessness have shifted in just a few years.
I don't think this project would have been possible 5 years ago. And as a community, we have grown so much in our understanding of what it takes to solve homelessness. We talk about the issue differently.
She says this project is a perfect example of many different groups working together on homelessness. The upfront costs for purchasing and renovating a facility came from the Rasmussen Foundation and Widener Apartment Homes. Beans Cafe used to run its soup kitchen here, but sold the property in 2021. Anchorage Mayor Dave Bronson also sang the project's praises.
I look forward to building on these successes in 2023 to provide more shelter space, more treatment beds, and more stable housing for folks looking to get back on their feet, and that's what this is all about.
The Third Avenue Resource and Navigation Center is expected to open to walk-ins at the end of the month. In Anchorage, I'm Jeremy Shea.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a Ketchikan podcast breaking down Filipino culture tries to be as cool and smooth as its namesake dessert.
But here is the debate. Is it an edible dessert or is it a drink?
Stay with us and maybe you'll find out.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The future looks bright because the University of Alaska is on a mission to empower Alaska. From drone piloting to vital climate research to critical mining solutions, the University of Alaska's three universities and their community campuses shape the jobs and careers that fuel the economy, creating a more empowered Alaska for all. Learn more at empower.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
The Anchorage Assembly Chair has subpoenaed Mayor Dave Bronson to provide documents related to former Health Director Joe Gerace. Gerace served as Health Director for just under a year before resigning after an investigation from Alaska Public Media and American Public Media found that he'd lied about his background, including military, educational, and medical credentials. The mayor said his administration would investigate Gerace's hiring and his tenure, but Assembly Chair Suzanne LaFrance says the administration has not revealed anything. So the Assembly is using its new subpoena powers to try to compel the release of information.
It's a pretty big, significant thing that happened, with the fraudulent credentials, and the public was promised, at least that's how I took it from, what the administration said, that there would be a report and some answers.
In an unprecedented move, the Assembly voted last month to give its chair the ability to subpoena people to get information on Gerace's tenure. It first subpoenaed then-Human Resources Director Nikki Chewbacca. Chewbacca responded to one subpoena and abruptly resigned a day before he was set to appear before the Assembly a second time. Bronson officials have repeatedly declined to provide information about their investigation into Gerace, saying it's a personnel matter. But LaFrance disagrees.
I don't understand, because there shouldn't be anything confidential in the report, especially a redacted one, because we're not asking for personnel information. You're simply wanting to know about the investigation and what was done and the process.
LaFrance said she did not expect the subpoena to necessarily prompt the Bronson administration to release more information. She said it's part of a procedural process before taking legal action. Her assumptions were confirmed late this afternoon. The mayor's office released a statement saying the city takes its obligation to protect employees' privacy seriously and would not make the documents public that the Assembly requested. Assembly leaders say they plan to take the matter to court. The Sitka Tribe of Alaska is concerned that a proposed extension of the Sitka Seawalk will destroy one of the few remaining cultural sites on the town's waterfront. The tribe and the Sitka Assembly conferred on this and other matters during their semi-annual government-to-government meeting on Monday. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
The Sitka Seawalk currently runs from Sitka National Historical Park to the Sitka Public Library. It's a waterfront enhancement funded largely through the local share of the head tax on cruise passengers levied by the state. A proposed extension of the Seawalk would create a new path around the outside of the O'Connell Bridge, essentially the last sliver of undeveloped waterfront in downtown Sitka. State planners noted that rock fill for the proposed route would impact a bed of eelgrass in the area, considered essential fish habitat for herring. And there was also something else, as Jeff Feldpausch, the tribe's natural resources director, explained.
They did find a man-made rock wall that extends off that point just from the base of the bridge, kind of back towards the street or the road. I think the state had gone back through and did some additional testing. We were concerned that that rock wall was probably part of a clam garden.
A clam garden is created by terracing a beach in an intertidal area with walls made from large stones. It's a form of mariculture used by the indigenous peoples of the Pacific Northwest for millennia. Tribal Council member Fred Olson Jr. noted the irony in that some places in Southeast were trying to enhance their waterfronts with recreations of nature or history, like the whale sculpture in Juneau. But Sitka had the real thing and was putting it at risk.
Instead of inventing something for tourists to look at, you have actual history to look at and just don't pave over it, you know.
Sitka's waterfront has been substantially modified and filled in over the years. Early in the last century, waves used to lap at the base of Castle Hill and at the back of the stores along Lincoln Street. Now, most of the area from Crescent Harbor to Eliason Harbor has been filled in for streets and public buildings like Harrigan Centennial Hall and the library. While the Seawalk doesn't seem like a very big project relative to the overall development of Sitka's waterfront, some tribal council members nevertheless felt very protective about what little of the natural environment remains. Council member Martha Moses suggested that the construction of the Seawalk has already come with a cultural cost.
When the Seawalk was being developed at the Totem Park, and there was that little hill right there that had the huckleberries and the blueberries, and when you had your elder go with you, you had a little trail that you could take your elder and they can go pick their own bucket, but that's already blasted through and there's a walkway through there, and that berry bush is gone. So if you make these developments, they're gone forever, and our tradition is gone forever.
Moses' view was echoed by fellow council member Rachel Moreno, who said she worked in summer on cruise ships and interacted with passengers who were really interested to take in Sitka's history without creating harm.
They want to know that they're not having a negative impact where they visit. And if we just are so worried about creating a place for them to walk without taking into consideration these historic sites and things that we grew up seeing, and gosh, we don't see them anymore. all us kids used to go up Blueberry Hill to pick berries, and that was a safe place to go. You know, we didn't have to worry about bears or anything. And so that, because of development, is gone. That's a childhood memory. And I would hate to see one of the last parts of the downtown Sitka that's natural right now be destroyed.
Scoping meetings were held in Sitka last fall on the Seawalk extension, and a public comment period was open through the end of the year. The state expects to have a 75% plan ready for public review by this coming spring or summer, as well as another public comment period. Mayor Steven Eisenbeiss told tribal council members that he'd be adding their concerns to those he's already heard.
Just being honest, I've heard a lot of negative on this Seawalk. So I think it is time for us to take a hard look at that project and determine if it is right for Sitka.
The Sitka Tribal Council and Sitka Municipal Assembly meet twice a year for a meal and to cover a joint agenda of issues important to each body. Other major topics covered at their February meeting included collaboration on an affordable housing summit this year, including homelessness, building redundancy into the community's broadband infrastructure, and coordinating the strategic plans of the tribe and the city. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
the Westmark Fairbanks Hotel and Conference Center, offering guests hot breakfast, Wi-Fi, and the Red Lantern Steak and Spirits Restaurant. Reservations at westmarkhotels.com.
Are you an Alaska artist or do you know one? March 1st is the deadline to apply for a Rasmussen Foundation Individual Artist Award. The program provides awards to artists, musicians, performers, writers, and culture bearers. Amounts are increasing. A project award, now $10,000, is available for an Alaska artist at any career stage. Mid-career and established artists may apply for a $25,000 artist fellowship. Learn more at rasmussen.org. Rasmussen Foundation, promoting a better life for all Alaskans. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation.
The National Weather Service is freshening up its Alaska marine zones. Aviva Braun is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Anchorage. She says starting in March, the Weather Service will have new coastal forecasts for the entire state.
We decided to go ahead and pare down our marine zones. So we'll have what is currently the coastal water forecast, which goes out from shoreline up to 100 nautical miles, is now going from shoreline to 15 nautical miles and then 15 nautical miles then out. So they'll be split into two zones, essentially.
Alaska has the longest coastline in the nation. With that comes a huge subsistence fishery. Those harvesters are generally fishing within a few miles of the coast. Braun says this zoning split stems from years of feedback from them saying,
what we had in the forecast was not accurate. The winds were far too strong, the waves far too high, and that was because it was capturing some of the more extreme conditions further out from shoreline, and people would have to adjust either up or down, and we don't want people to have to do that.
The entire state will see the 15-mile split, but Braun says some areas like Bristol Bay and Prince William Sound will get even more zones because they're larger areas in general. And the far west Aleutian Islands, starting past Adak, won't actually see this nearshore change at all. Braun says that's because there isn't much traffic in the area. Anyone receiving Weather Service alerts or checking forecasts will see the new zones starting March 8th, and even if there's no difference in the area you're navigating, the zone identification numbers will change. A Ketchikan podcaster is breaking down all things Filipino culture. Holo Holo Mix Mix started up last summer and launched a revival this year. KRBD's Reagan Miller stopped by a recent recording session to learn more.
Holo Holo, a Filipino crushed ice dessert, is a refreshing, cool treat on a warm day. And that's what Archie Inoncillo wants his podcast, Holo Holo Mix Mix, to be like for Filipino listeners.
So this is the Holo Holo Mix Mix podcast with your host, Archie. I love Holo Holo. And it's one of my favorite desserts. But here is the debate. Is it an edible dessert or is it a drink?
The question was his playful opener to an upcoming episode that tackles a wide variety of topics, ranging from language barriers and education to superstitions and Filipino representation in pop culture. Inoncillo had two guests, Zarina Cabillo and Aline Alva, members of the high school's Phil Am Club. The two students both moved to the United States from the Philippines, Cabillo when she was 14 and Alva when she was 10. So, is Halo Halo a drink or a dessert? Alva weighed in.
Oh, good question.
I would say edible. Because it has the ice cream.
There's a lot of stuff in it.
And the leche flan.
Halo Halo was just one of the topics they took up with Inoncillo. The trio chatted with their host about topics big and small, including what it feels like to find community in Ketchikan as a Filipino person. For Alva, Ketchikan High School's Phil Am Club was a gateway to the Filipino community. Before joining, she didn't hang out with many of the other Filipino students.
So that was the start when I started hanging out with Filipino and stuff. It was really scary to speak to all of them, too.
Through the course of the podcast, the trio unpacks shared experiences. That includes a frank discussion of the different pressures they all feel when it comes to speaking Tagalog, the national language of the Philippines. Cabillo shared she still gets nervous speaking English, her second language.
I talk with adults and it's fine, but if I talk to the people who are like in my age, I don't understand the slang and stuff.
Oh.
And they would say like, oh, that's frog. Did you mean this? And I'm like, sorry, I'm Asian.
And it goes both ways. Host Inoncillo was born in Ketchikan to Filipino parents and says he struggles with Tagalog. He says he practices plenty, but still braces himself for jokes about his language skills.
As an American, it doesn't feel like a joke.
Mm.
It feels like I'm not being authentic enough of a Filipino because I don't know I can't speak the language.
The podcast episode, which is still in production, will also touch on conversations about Filipino traditions. Cabillo mentioned someone jumping with coins in their pockets when the clock strikes midnight on New Year's Eve.
I think they have to jump 5 times so they could get taller for that next year.
Oh, man.
Never works.
I think I stopped jumping after a while.
They also talked about the darker side of Filipino superstition, like stories about a monster that preys on pregnant women and other vampire-like creatures.
No, my favorite one is Manananggal.
Oh, man. Manananggal. Where it's like, it's, oh, I've had dreams about her.
It's an aswang, yeah. But his lower body
but
is
he's
out.
Separated from the top of that top half.
He flies away.
Yeah.
The conversation touched on the growing number of Filipino people represented in mainstream TV and movies.
But you know, it's like there's like a whole lot of like more Filipino stuff in the media now, though.
Yeah.
Like in the mainstream media.
It's so cool. Like, I think it's because there's a lot of people here, and Joel Foy has been doing a great job
promoting Filipino culture.
Reflecting, Cabillo says the Filipino community in Ketchikan is one that tries to make you feel like you're in the Philippines. But she wants the community to stretch out in Ketchikan and invite more people in.
So why wouldn't we do it to like a bigger place so everybody could feel it?
The Halo Halo Mix Mix podcast is a project of the Ketchikan Wellness Coalition's Strengthening Cultural Unity Task Force. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Jeremy Shea and Wesley Early in Anchorage, Robert Woolsey in Sitka, Maggie Nelson in Unalaska, and Reagan Miller in Ketchikan. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Madeline Rose is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. There are many ways to support your local public media station. Donate now and arrange to make a planned gift as a bequest. Your legacy will stretch from today to many tomorrows. Planning today for a gift down the road builds a legacy of support for the media you treasure. Thank you for considering this public radio station in your estate planning. You can talk to your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. Thank you. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.